This is a spoken word version of a book review that I wrote that appeared in the Reformed Baptist Trumpet, Volume 1, Number 2, in 2010 on pages 12 through 14. The review is of a book by James M. Renahan titled Edification and Beauty, The Practical Ecclesiology of the English Particular Baptists, 1675 to 1705. It was published by Paternoster Press in 2008, and it is 207 pages in length. Introduction. This work is Volume 17 in the Studies in Baptist History and Thought series issued by Paternoster Press. It is the welcome publication of Reformed Baptist historian James M. Renahan's dissertation, completed in 1997 at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. Renahan portrays this work as, quote, an attempt to describe in detail the implementation of confessional ecclesiological principles among a large group of churches which subscribed the Second London Baptist Confession in the final quarter of the 17th century, end quote, page Roman numeral 19. The title is taken from early Baptist pastor Nehemiah Cox, who stated, quote, the edification and beauty of the church is much concerned in her order, end quote, page Roman numeral 23. Renahan's method for his study of the practical ecclesiology of early particular Baptists comes from his examination of three sets of sources taken in concentric circles. The innermost ring is the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith itself. The middle ring is the ecclesiological writings of various early particular Baptists, and the outer ring are the manuscripts of church books. Summary of content. The book consists of six chapters. Chapter 1 provides an historical overview of the emergence and development of particular Baptists. Chapters 2 through 6 then provide ecclesiological analysis of various issues: the nature of the church, church government, church officers, church worship, church associations. Here's a brief glimpse into each of the chapters. In chapter 1, Renahan first traces the origins of Calvinistic Baptists to division in the separatist Jacob Lathrop Jesse Church in the 1630s. Based on his examination of the Kiffin manuscript, Renahan concludes that these early Baptists most likely restored the practice of baptism within their own circle, rather than through contact with Dutch Anabaptists. Renahan also makes a strong case for the close relationship of independent church leaders like the dissenting brethren at the Westminster Assembly, Thomas Goodwin, Philip Nye, Jeremiah Burroughs, William Bridge, and Sidrac Simpson, with the early particular Baptist leaders. He further argues that the early Baptists self-consciously viewed themselves and their churches as among the Reformed churches. This discussion is particularly valuable given recent comments made by some Presbyterians, like R. Scott Clark, who argue that Baptists should not use the label Reformed. To the contrary, Renahan argues that early Baptists, like Knowles and Keach, quote, believed that they had taken the principles of the Reformation to their logical conclusion, end quote, page 17. Thus, by recovering the biblical ordering of the church, quote, they were self-consciously more Reformed than the Paedo-Baptist Reformed churches, end quote, page 17. Renahan next offers a detailed look at the development and adoption of the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, drawn from the Westminster Confession of 1647 and the Savoy Declaration of Platform of Polity, 1658. The Baptists were concerned to show that they were orthodox and, in most ways, identical with the convictions of the Puritans around them. Thus, they were, quote, in the broad stream of English Reformed confessional Christianity, end quote, page 17. Renahan concludes that the confession originated in the Petit France Church and was most likely composed by Nehemiah Cox and William Collins. The first written in 1677, it was endorsed in a General Assembly of Baptist Ministers and Messengers in 1689. Interestingly, Renahan notes that although the document is known as the 1689 Confession, he could find no evidence that it was printed in that year. See page 28, note 100. It was published in 1677, 1688, and 1699. Finally, Renahan offers an intriguing survey of the demographics of the particular Baptists, indicating that from around 1715 to 1718, they composed around 0.74% of the English and 1.31% of the Welsh population. Particular Baptist churches were found throughout the country in both urban and rural areas. Some churches were large. London's Petit France congregation recorded 538 members in 1676, and they likely had an even larger number in attendance, and others were small. The Norfolk Church had 51 members in 1689. The churches were primarily composed of the poor from the lower classes of society. Women composed the majority. Churches had trouble supporting their ministers, and most of the early pastors were what we would call bivocational. So, quote, Kiffin was a merchant, Knowles a schoolteacher, and Keach a tailor and a bookseller, end quote, page 35. In chapter 2 on the nature of the church, Renahan argues that, quote, ecclesiology was a driving force behind the Baptist movement, end quote, page 37. Noting the 1689 Confession's definition of the universal church and the local church, Renahan contends that the early Baptists possessed a Catholicity of spirit. They thus considered Paedo-Baptist assemblies, Presbyterians, and Independents to be defective and yet true churches. This spirit extended to the inclusion of churches in the particular Baptist assemblies, like the one in 1689, that held to both open and closed membership. Renahan offers a valuable sketch of the serious process followed by particular Baptists in the constituting of local churches, noting that some, like Keach, insisted on the use of membership covenants, while others, like Knowles, did not. He also traces their understanding of the duties of church membership and the exercise of church discipline, concluding that the visible saints, for the most part, lived up to expectations. Finally, he stresses that for these early Baptists, evangelism was always accompanied by church planting. Quote, the Baptists could not conceive of evangelism apart from church planting, end quote, page 60. In chapter 3 on church government, Renahan begins by asking whether the early particular Baptists followed a more congregational or independent model of church government. Is the seat of authority in the congregation or in the elders? Here, Renahan interacts with the recent work by Malaysian Reformed Baptist pastor-theologian Po Boon Singh, who has argued that the particular Baptists were closer to the independents in ecclesiology. After tracing evidence of diversity among early Baptist leaders, for example, Knowles' modified independency, Cox's congregational consent / rule by elder, and Keach's congregationalism / rule by elder, along with examination of church minute books, Renahan argues that Poe has overstated his case. He concludes that independency among particular Baptists, quote, was not a system emphasizing the rights of elders so much as it was an attempt to maintain the rights of the people while carrying out the appointed tasks of the eldership, end quote, page 87. In chapter 4 on church officers, Renahan examines the two offices of elder and deacon outlined in the 1689 Confession. Though acknowledging that the Confession does not address a distinction between teaching and ruling elders, and that the majority of churches did not recognize a distinct office of ruling elder, Renahan concludes that, quote, at least a small number of the churches made a distinction between teaching and ruling elders, end quote, page 100. Hansard Knowles even held that the churches in each city should be guided by a preeminent minister of Christ, see page 101. Renahan also describes the Baptist practice of setting apart so-called gifted brethren as lay preachers, see pages 107 to 114. Finally, he examines the role of deacons in the Baptist churches as an office primarily given the task of benevolence. Noteworthy here is his debunking of the moderate Baptist myth that early Baptists regularly appointed women to serve as deacons. Contra moderate historians like Leon Macbeth, Renahan notes that only in one congregation, the Broadmead congregation, was there a mention of deaconesses, And even here, these were special servants to the sick, and not, quote, an office equivalent to the deacons, end quote, page 116. In chapter 5 on worship, the author traces the particular Baptist's embrace of the regulative principle. He cites Horton Davies, who notes that baptism apart, it would be difficult to distinguish their worship from that of the Independents. The Baptist view of the Lord's Day as the Christian Sabbath was little different from, quote, the broader Puritan/Independent/Separatist religious culture on this issue, end quote, page 122. As self-consciously part of the Puritan movement, Baptists were concerned for simplicity and rejected any element for which scriptural warrant could not be found. Preaching was central. Women were not allowed to exercise any kind of authoritative verbal communication in the churches. Again, Renahab observes in note 59 that Macbeth, quote, seriously misrepresents the facts in this regard. The chapter concludes with a discussion of the great controversy, so-called, over the singing of hymns between Benjamin Keach, who advocated for hymn singing, and Isaac Marlowe, who opposed it. See pages 146 to 152. Finally, in chapter 6 on Association of Churches, Renahan points out the high value that the early Baptists placed on communion among sister churches. He concludes that the 1689 Confession advocates what he calls formal associationalism. Under proper circumstances, the churches, quote, gladly entered into strict and solemn arrangements, end quote, page 173. Conclusion and commendation. This book is highly recommended. It is an especially helpful corrective for any pastor who might have been influenced by H. Leon Macbeth's moderate construal of Baptist history in The Baptist Heritage, Four Centuries of Baptist Witness, published by Broadman in 1987. This is a point Renahan acknowledges on page Roman numeral 20, note 4. Renahan convincingly argues that the particular Baptists were not driven by so-called soul liberty, but by a passion for precise confessional doctrine. This work is especially helpful in detailing the way in which particular Baptists saw their movement as part of the Reformation theological tradition, and even taking it to its logical biblical conclusions as the issues of baptism and ecclesiology were pursued. They were more influenced by and akin to the Puritans and Independents than the Anabaptists. What is most exciting about this book is the way it will help Reformed Baptist churches in our day understand their own heritage as they live out the gospel in our times and set a course for the future. This ends the review. You can subscribe to Christ Reformed Baptist Church's Sermon Audio podcast feed in iTunes to receive sermons, podcasts, and book reviews like this one.